This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, friends. It's your boy, Michael Cruz Kane, and I'm back again with another episode of A Good Cry, the podcast that critics are calling the best podcast of all time. Every single critic has said it. Every one of them. Don't look it up. You don't need to. Just trust me. They're all saying it. Grief thoughts this week. A friend of mine DM'd me to say, I had asked on previous episodes for kinds of grief you want us to talk about. And a friend of mine had asked me to talk about grief for the life that you might have had if it weren't for, you know, whatever the tragedy that befell you was. And I think that's a side of things we haven't really explored that much. And I'm eager to talk about it more on the podcast. We've been focused on life as it is after the tragedy or the grief sets in for the first time. But grief for the life you might have had, I think, is a very real thing. To imagine, you know, the person that you lost surviving and what life would be like if they were still here with you, or, you know, the marriage staying together, or whatever it is. Today's guest also deals with a kind of grief that we haven't talked about on the podcast before. His name is Jason Sines, and I knew Jason back at UCB New York when the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater was still a thing. We were in, you know, overlapping social circles, and I always knew him as this just tremendously funny guy, which he continues to be. But also, about 4 years ago, Jason had an accident, and the accident left him paralyzed from the waist down. And that's something that I have no experience talking about. So I hope you'll forgive how clumsy I am in this episode as I try to navigate an area that I'm not used to discussing. And Jason is, you know, incredibly patient and so thoughtful and so open. He talks about things that I think a lot of people are interested in knowing about but afraid to ask about. And I really appreciated his candor in coming on here and really bearing his soul. It's a great conversation. I was very lucky to have it. This is Jason Sines on A Good Cry. I hope it helps. Jason, thanks for being here. We kick the podcast off with the question, what is your relationship to grief?
Wow. It's a new relationship. I've, you know, lost grandparents in my life that I was pretty close to. And I felt grief a little bit during those times. But now with my spinal cord injury, the grief comes in waves. And it, you know, it comes and bumps into me in unexpected times. So it's definitely a new, and even though it's been a few years since my injury, it's still a new and fresh relationship.
How long ago was your accident?
It was December 1st, 2018. So
like 3.5 years-ish.
It's gonna be coming up on 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be 4 years this December.
And I know a little bit about it because we were sort of like members of the same comedy community for a while. Mm-hmm. But would you mind describing what happened?
Of course. So I had just started dating, spoiler, my current wife.
Okay. Spoiler.
More on that later. But I had just started dating her. It was our third date when the injury, the accident occurred. It was a Friday night. I had bought tickets in Hollywood to go see Me First in the Gimme Gimme's Christmas show. And if you're unfamiliar with that
band, I don't know what that is, but that like, sounds very fun.
They do like rock covers of, you know, and like reggae covers, ska covers of popular songs. And so for this concert, they were doing covers of Christmas carols and stuff. So it was a very fun show to go see. And this was our third date officially, and we were really vibing with each other, really enjoying each other's company. And we went to a bar and had a drink there, and then we went to the show and we had a drink there. And I wouldn't say that we were drunk by any means, but we were definitely having fun together. And after the show, we went back to my apartment, and I had mentioned before we went out that I have a great roof and that at night we should take a look at the stars and the Hollywood sign you can see from my roof. So we should do that when we come back from the show. Well, that's what we did. We went up to the roof, and this is a roof that that we are not supposed to go up onto. But the building manager leaves the door propped open for circulation. And so several times me and my friends in the building would go up there and hang out and, you know, chat and then go back down. So it wasn't like this is my first time up there. And it wasn't like I was always alone. I've been up there with other tenants of the building. And so I thought it was pretty relatively safe. But when I took Aaron up there, you know, I showed her the lights, showed her the Hollywood sign, and then I leaned up against the skylight that was up there. And maybe a few seconds later,
it's like, it's not, it's like, when I think of skylights, I think of like them being totally flat, but it's like, it's like some, it's like a vertical.
No, it's more like a dome.
Oh, okay. I see.
So I sat on the ledge and leaned up against the dome, and Aaron joined me. And when she put her weight on the dome as well, it was too much for both of us to be there, and it broke. And that's the last thing I remember, is feeling it break underneath me. And then I woke up in the ambulance and I couldn't feel my legs. Aaron didn't lose consciousness. She fell through the skylight with me, but I hit harder. I landed on the steps, and that's what really messed up my spine. Aaron had a concussion. So did I, but I was knocked out. And, you know, she yelled for help, and some of the people came out of their apartments, and an ambulance was called, and I was taken to the hospital, and so was she, because she was bleeding and she had fallen through the skylight as well. That I remember texting my friends Jeff and Dawn to move my car so I don't get a ticket. I'm in the hospital. I don't know how long I'll be here. And then that's all I remember from the initial incident. I contracted, was infected with spinal meningitis soon after that. And needed heavy antibiotics. I was really out of, you know, my head. I don't remember anything from that time period as they fought the meningitis.
And do you contract does meningitis something you get that in the hospital, or like, I don't know anything about meningitis. How does that, is that just something people get sometimes?
Yeah. I contracted it somehow in the hospital.
Oh
yeah. Yeah. So it was touch and go there for a while. And thankfully I don't remember that time of my recovery. I remember coming out of it probably a month later, when I was finally, you know, getting out of the ICU, finally moving to a rehab facility. But my memory was shot. I was confused a lot. I remember for a while, I thought my mom was my aunt.
And that's from the injury or from the medication or from all of it?
I think it must have been from the injury. I was just very confused after waking up. From the meningitis and from the concussion I had. I was just very confused. I had to do, you know, like physical therapy. I had to do cognitive therapy. I really basically had to do therapy for all my functions because the injury was so bad. And I was in the hospital in ICU for about a month and a half. And then I was transferred to a couple different rehab places. I finally ended up at California Rehab and wasn't released to go home until May of 2019. So that was like 4 or 5 months in hospital and rehab from that injury.
Yeah.
And I remember getting out and the real sort of recovery happened when I was back in my new apartment. I couldn't go into the apartment I fell in because there were steps going up to my apartment. So I needed to find a new apartment in Hollywood, but I remember the real recovery began when I was back at home And there were no doctors, there were no nurses. It was just me and my family and friends trying to come to grips with my new life of paralysis and how to deal with getting around, going down to the store, how to get there safely, how to call ahead to make sure that it's accessible for someone in a wheelchair. I don't remember crying really hard in the hospital, but when I got home, it really hit me hard that my life was drastically changed forever.
Is it, I'm trying to draw analogs to like my grief experience, and I'm sure our experiences are, I mean, they're obviously very different, but after my son died, I feel like everything that happened while there were still lots of people around was like totally a blur. That it's like we do the funeral, we had him cremated. Like, I don't really remember. I vaguely remember anything that happened in there.
Right.
And it's really like, okay, now I'm home alone with my wife. And now it's like, oh fuck, I'm so sad.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a similar thing where like you, or it's hard to track what's happening in the hospital because there's so much around? And then there's like a paradigm shift when you get home.
Yeah. Yes. You know, like in the hospital, there was medication to take. There was therapy to do. There was, you know, doctors to see. And so I was, you know, busy as much as I could be in the hospital or being tended to. And so there was a lot of stuff going on. But you're right. As soon as you get home and you're back to your life and things settle down, you have the time and the mental space to allow that grief to finally seep in and hit you hard. And that's what happened to me. I remember, you know, it was a week or so after I got home that I cried the hardest because here is my life now. You know, you're in the hospital, it's a different environment. You know, you're sick, you know, you're injured, you know, people are here to take care of you. But when you're back in your own life again, and it's just you and your friends and your family, that's when I think it hits the hardest.
And how, it's been 3.5 years-ish since the accident. How has your grief or like the way that you cope with paralysis, how has your perspective on it changed? If, I mean, I assume that it has.
It has. It's, you know, I go between holding on to the hope that one day I might be able to walk again, and the reality of being a person in a wheelchair that might never walk again and trying to be the best I can in my wheelchair. So my grief is, you know, I've sort of had to look at it more reasonably as time goes on, that saying, hey, if I'm going to be in this wheelchair my whole life, I want to be strong enough to get around. I want to be independent enough to go places by myself. And I want to make sure that I'm in the best health I can be.
Yeah.
I don't know if that borders on denial that I might one day be okay, but I think it's a more realistic, pragmatic way of looking at my life now and allows me to, you know, find happiness and joy in the simple things of like getting into the car myself and driving to the store and being able to get out of the car and go into the store and buy something and get back into the car and go home, which, you know, people who do that every day take for granted. But it allowed me to really be proud of myself that, yeah, I'm in a wheelchair and I might be for the rest of my life, but that doesn't mean I have to stop doing things and being myself. That's kind of where I am now.
Are there like mile markers in your getting acclimated to being in a wheelchair that change your point of view? Like something that like, you know, you talk about going to the store, for example, like and being able to like do that independently.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other things that happen in your, I don't know if rehabilitation is the right word.
Right.
Are there other things that happen in there that you're like, okay, this is good. This is like, yes. Now this thing I couldn't do, now I can do this. That feels like victories in this, in the process or no?
No, for sure. And it's funny how you phrase it. Yeah, they are victories, but they're so small, you know, looking at it from the outside. Like a victory for me was installing handbars by the toilet so I could get on and off the toilet by myself. You know, being able to, you know, wash up and shower by myself, you know, being able to transfer from my wheelchair onto a shower bench and shower by myself and then transfer back onto the wheelchair and do it safely and independently. That was a big accomplishment for me, you know?
And does that come from doing, like, working out? So, like, now you can do that? Or does it come from, like, an apparatus that you're like, okay, well, now I've constructed something that allows me to do these things I couldn't do before? I know you talked about shower bars and stuff like that, but what is the balance there?
Well, a lot of it was, you know, taught to me by physical therapists, especially in rehab, of how to transfer and use your arms and your weight to lift your butt off of one thing onto another. A lot of it's mental. You can't second guess yourself when you do something like that. You have to really commit to pushing yourself and moving. I learned that in rehab, but still sometimes I get a little nervous when doing that. But I feel like doing it many times every day, and also having a wife and family that can spot me so that I don't feel so nervous at the same time. It's mostly me. It's mostly my strength and my physical therapy and my training that allow me to feel confident enough that, oh, I can do this. I can do this now. You know, I can't stand up and walk to the shower, but I can roll over there and I can transfer onto the shower bench and I can take a shower by myself.
And is physical therapy a daily thing? Does it continue?
No, it's a weekly thing.
Okay.
Yeah, it still continues. Yeah. Unfortunately, over the Christmas break, I got injured again, not as severely as my spinal cord injury, but I was traveling with my wife to go see my family in Virginia. And when we finally landed there, an airport employee asked if he could push my wheelchair up the ramp going back into the terminal. And it was such a long day of traveling. I was like, yes.
Like, just trying to be nice.
Yeah, of course. I assumed good intentions from him.
Right.
But unfortunately, for whatever reason he was going through, he was careless. He pushed me really fast. And the first bump we hit on the ramp, I went flying. I flew out of my wheelchair onto my knees and my ankles.
Fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. And broke my right ankle and my left femur above the knee. So that was December, and I have hopefully one more month. My next appointment with the surgeon and the bone doctor is in March, but it really ruined Christmas. You know, we had plans to go to Hawaii the week of Christmas.
Yeah, no shit. That's terrible.
Yeah, we were going to take a trip to Hawaii that next week, and I had plans to go to Vegas with some guy friends in January. I had to cancel all that. So I can't do physical therapy, which is a bummer. I used to be able to stand up in different frames and different apparatuses that they have there at the gym, which is good for your bone density and health. But all that's kind of on hold, which is, my therapist says, it's another loss that you're dealing with. And he's right. But I'm trying to keep a positive attitude, knowing that this isn't going to last forever and I'll be healed. It's just taking longer than normal.
Wow, that's truly, I mean, that's a series of circumstances that is so fucked up. It's kind of unbelievable.
Yeah. It was a hard lesson to learn. I think the lesson I learned was that even if someone has good intentions, and even if they seem like they would be skilled and trained in pushing my wheelchair, I can't assume that they know what they're doing, especially if they're a stranger. And so I can't trust other people with my body, even if it's simple as pushing me in a wheelchair.
And that's a really unfortunate realization to have. That sounds pretty bleak, right? To be like, I would assume that that I could trust another human being who's trying ostensibly to do the right thing.
Yeah.
That they could handle this job. And that guy probably has pushed people on wheelchairs before.
Sure. But, you know, they probably weren't paralyzed, or maybe most of them weren't paralyzed. And there's a difference between pushing someone in the wheelchair who can brace their legs and someone who can't brace their legs. And so when we hit that bump, I went flying and had no way to stop myself.
I mean, that also seems like lawsuit time. Is it that kind of a situation, or is it more like you're focused on just recovery and that's it?
I'm focused on recovery. My lawyer's focused on a lawsuit.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. That's a good delineation of responsibilities.
Yeah, I don't know how to file anything in court. I'll let him do that. So unfortunately, I think they probably know that a lawsuit is pending. But really, Michael, me personally, I'm trying to stay positive about my situation and try to stay focused on, I will be healed one day. I will be back to the way I was before this injury. But yeah, it was definitely careless and they definitely injured me and they should be held accountable.
Yeah. I mean, the reputation of airlines in general is not good. I think this is really, I don't know if you've heard, but people make fun of airlines a lot. And this is really, but it's
not just the food,
not just the food.
My big worry, you know, flying in a wheelchair was that the airplane staff would damage my wheelchair.
Sure.
I was reading so many horror stories on the internet about people that got to their destination who needed a wheelchair and it was so busted they couldn't use it, you know? And that was my number one fear. I didn't think that they would injure me. I think they'd break my wheelchair. But it's one thing being paralyzed has taught me is that you can't take anything for granted and you can't assume anything. You can't assume that a restaurant is wheelchair accessible just because the website says it is. You should call and talk to somebody. Don't assume that just because this man works for the airport that he'll know how to safely push you up a wheelchair ramp. You know, I really have to prepare and plan every time I do something. I can't be as spontaneous as I used to be before my spinal cord injury. I really have to make sure that I'm taking care of myself and that I can do what I'm setting out to do. And that's another part of my grief, I feel, is learning how to deal with that loss of spontaneity. You know, it's for me to get up and go someplace takes a lot more planning than it used to.
Yeah, my dad is on the board of a college in Connecticut, and he's very, it's kind of a digression, but go back to the beginning. My brother had cancer when he was a kid. He's fine now. I mean, except that he's Republican.
There's no cure for that.
We haven't found nothing. There's no remission, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But he was wheelchair bound for a time, and we used to volunteer also at this camp for kids who had very serious illnesses, and we encountered a lot of children who have, you know, who are wheelchair bound or who have various modifications to their daily life because of sickle cell anemia or whatever. Anyway, my dad has been obsessed sort of with this idea of accessibility at the college and elsewhere, because a thing that he's constantly aware of is that, like, you know, when people talk about minority rights or about privilege, the ability to enter a building is something people like just don't think about. Like, it's completely off the radar.
Right.
To be like, you know what? Like, we need to advocate for the rights of people of different genders and different races and different, but like literally when we talk about people being kept out, some people are actually kept out. Like they can't get in, literally, it's not a metaphor. They physically can't get into places. And I think that is like what you're talking about is a conversation that my dad is having all the time and relaying to me. And it is a thing that you truly, as someone who doesn't have to navigate the stuff that you are going through, it's something you just, it never occurs to you that, you know, when you're like, you're trying to park and there's three empty spaces at the front that are meant to be reserved for people in wheelchairs. And you're like, come on, I could just park here. Like, who cares?
Right.
There is actually a person who needs that spot.
It's me.
Like, that spot matters to someone. It's me.
Yeah, it's me. I've yelled at several people here in Los Angeles who parked in a handicapped spot just to run in and get a burrito real quick. And I see him coming out with a burrito. I'm like, hi, I'm actually in a wheelchair. I needed this spot. And you're walking around with your burrito. You can't park here. It's illegal. It's happened many times. You know, someone's running up to the ATM of a bank and they park in the handicapped spot, even though I needed to get to the store that's next door. And I did, you know, I never parked in handicapped spots when I was a able-bodied person before my spinal cord injury. But unfortunately, being in a wheelchair has forced me to think about these things. And, you know, like when me and my wife go to a hotel where they have pool lifts, and if you go to a hotel, most of them have them. You can see them. It's like a chair that you can get on and it lowers you into the pool. But even if the hotel has them, are they working? Does the staff know how to turn them on? Will the battery be charged?
Right.
It's those types of, you know, things that I have to go to the front desk of every hotel that I go to the first thing and go, hey, I'm in a wheelchair. I would like to get in the pool. Does it work? And it's, you know, it's not just Best Western, but it's, you know, nicer hotels. It's if you're not in a wheelchair and you can walk around like a normal person can. You just don't think about these things, even if it's the law. Even if the ADA law says you have to have these things, does it mean that they maintain them? Does it mean that they're accessible? Usually not, unfortunately. And so I have to think about these things now because I'm in a wheelchair. I wish more people would think about that, you know, who are in positions of management and stuff. I go to restaurants and establishments that it's more often when it's easier for me to get into it.
Sure.
I've got a couple of restaurants here in LA that I love going to because I know they can accommodate me. There's some places that I really like going to before my injury that I know I can't go back to. And it's a shame, but...
Yeah, I mean, that makes a ton of sense that it removes a layer of stress from like what the evening is going to be. If you're like, okay, well, at least I know for sure I can literally enter the building.
Yeah. So yeah, the loss of independence has also been something I've been grieving.
And if this is a question you don't feel like answering, that's obviously more than your prerogative. But when you talk about the grief coming in waves, are there moments you can remember that like set it off? I don't want to make you feel terrible. So if you don't want to talk about that, we don't have to.
No, I mean, there's nothing you can do to make me feel terrible unless you call me names, which I don't think you'll do, Mike. You seem like a nice guy.
Yeah, not today.
I did have a homeless crazy man in Hollywood bump into me and say, "Watch out, you paraplegic bitch."
Jeez.
Which I thought was very specific. This crazy homeless man knows the medical term for my paralysis.
Yeah, the level of education.
I mean, that was just like, I was just like pissed for you to know that and insult me with the correct medical term. That's pretty good, my man, but I was still pissed. But to answer your question, I think generally I bump into my grief when I'm reminded of the things I can't do or can't feel anymore. Now, I got injured my lower vertebrae. It's the T11, T12 vertebrae. And right at that level is basically means that above that level, from your waist up, you have full function. I can move my hands. I can move my arms. I can work out my upper body. From the waist up, I'm as normal as I was before. But from the waist down, even though I'm not a complete severed spinal cord injury, I still have no motor function below my waist, and that includes bladder and bowel. There was one time, the second summer when I was back home, I went to a friend's birthday at a pool that they had a pool at their house. And with, you know, some friend's help, they carried me into the pool, which is nice. And I got in the floaty and I was enjoying that. And then they helped me get out of the pool. And I dried off, in, you know, with the help of my wife and switched into shorts and stuff. And then they all went up onto the deck to barbecue and have dinner. And I was sitting on their outside like patio couch. And I'm completely dry at this point. I had changed. But about half an hour into it, I look down and the whole seat cushion is wet. And I call my wife over. It's like, I think I just pissed all over our friend's outdoor couch here.
Oh, no.
And she's like, oh, yeah, I think you did. I'm like, this, can we not mention this? You know, can we, I'll get up when it's time to leave and we can just go. But on the way home, I felt so small. I felt like, this isn't supposed to happen to me until in my 90s when I'm old and feeble that I lose control of my bladder. This was just the middle of the afternoon and I just pissed all over my friend's couch. Those are hard times. You know, it happens at home too when I'm, you know, just hanging with myself and I just piss all over myself. You know, that's when it comes back and visits me is that, you know, you're not the same anymore. And you can't feel, you know, half your body. You can't feel some of the most important parts of your body, like your bladder and your butthole and your dick. Like that's the fun part of the body, right? Those are the parts that you want to have like sensation from. You want to know when you have to pee, but I don't know when I have to pee, so I have to set a timer and catheterize myself. I can't feel my penis, and so thankfully, I've, you know, got skilled in other ways to make love, but sometimes I need to take a Viagra to get an erection just so that my wife and I can, you know, have traditional sex, even though I can't feel it. And so, like, if it wasn't for my lovely wife, Erin, and, you know, the support and the love that she gives me, if I was just doing this all by myself, I don't think I'd be as well off as I am now, because, you know, not being able to feel your wife when you're making love to her is tough. It's a tough thing. I've talked to other people in wheelchairs, and we've joked, if like the doctors say, they give you a choice. Hey, we'll let you walk again for a day. We can let you walk again for a day, or we can let you ejaculate for a day. Which one would you choose? And me and all my buddies who are in wheelchairs were like, no, we would choose to be able to ejaculate again. You know, in a chair, even since we couldn't walk, but we would choose to feel our dick again. And it's weird. It's weird. It's been years since my injury. It's been years since I've felt my penis, and I'm still the same person, but it's changed me, you know, as it would any man.
Yeah.
It's changed me. I definitely am a better listener now. I'm not controlled by my penis like I was beforehand. So that's a good thing. I think me and Aaron.
You're right. You're free from that.
I'm free from that burden of an erection. So there are some pluses to it that, yeah, I'm a little more emotionally open. I'm a little less driven by sex. I'm a little more communicative with my wife. But, you know, still as a man and having lived your whole life as that being a part of who you are and your manhood, you know, it's taken a lot of therapy and a lot of conversation and a lot of time and grief to realize that probably is never going to be a part of my life again.
You just mentioned therapy, and you talked about other, like, it seems like there's some community of like friends that you have that are in wheelchairs as well. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about like how other people have helped you process this?
Absolutely.
I want to talk about your wife also, but I feel like that's a whole separate chapter.
Sure. We could keep talking about the camaraderie and the support I get from other people, paralyzed people in wheelchairs. First of all, I like to say that I have a friend who I met because of my injury, who was involved in the UCB here out in Los Angeles. Her name is Santina, and she's been paralyzed since she was a little girl. So her whole life, she's been in a wheelchair, and she's fought to have UCB Franklin put in a ramp backstage so that performers who are in wheelchairs could get onto stage. And I've learned a lot about how to live in a wheelchair through her, because she's done it her whole life. You know, she calls me new money and herself old money because we're both going through the same thing, but she's dealt with it her whole life.
Yeah.
So she's really helped me when it comes to navigating this new life of mine. And she's great. And she's really a talented writer and actress. And she continues to work and do stuff. And I'm really happy that I know her. My gym, my physical therapy gym, is called The Perfect Step. It was founded by a quadriplegic, which means that you get injured so high up in your spine that you lose full function of your arms and your hands. But that didn't stop him from starting an organization to help other paralyzed people. And now he's opened up a gym called The Perfect Step, where they have therapists and trainers and equipment that are specialized for people with paralysis. So I can get up into a standing position safely. I can stretch in ways that I couldn't at home, you know, to keep myself, you know, from cramping up because I'm sitting all day. And they also have wonderful resources and scholarship programs. They help finance my new lightweight wheelchair that I can break down and put in the passenger seat of a car with me by myself. And that really changed the game for me because it allowed me to be more independent. And they just, you know, and the clients are all people that have paralysis, either from disease or from injury. Some are young kids, some are older people, all ages. And, you know, it's just nice to see other paralyzed people, you know, trying to better themselves and trying to deal with their paralysis in the same place with therapists and physical therapists who are skilled in what you do with people who have paralysis. So I love that place. I miss that place. And as soon as these fractures heal up, I'll go back. But there's that. And then there's also the Triumph Foundation, which is, they came and visited me in rehab. And Andrew Skinner is their founder, who is also another wheelchair-bound man who got injured in college when he was skiing. But now he has like a team of ambassadors who go to rehab clinics and say, hi, we're part of the Triumph Foundation. We're sorry to hear what happened to you. Here is a backpack full of resources and tools and stuff that can help you now that you're in a wheelchair. And the best thing that Triumph does is they organize adaptive sports events. So I've been able to go play basketball, wheelchair basketball. I've been able to go canoeing. I've been able to go hand cycling. I've been able to play golf and archery. Stuff set up for, you know, people in wheelchairs. And it's that was how I liked working out before my injury. I liked playing basketball. I liked going for hikes. So sports is a nice way for me to get my exercise. And it's, I love Triumph because they put on these events like every month where I can, for free, go out and play some sports that are monitored and tailored for people in wheelchairs, which is very great.
That sounds awesome.
So it's the Triumph Foundation, the Perfect Step, and, you know, my friends like Santina and that have, that are my support group for sure. And it really helps. It helps me to know that, okay, I might be in a wheelchair, but I don't have to stop being who I am. And these people haven't stopped being who they are. And it's just reassuring to be around those types of people.
Yeah.
I miss it. I can't wait to get back to it.
Again, to crudely try to analog this to my own life, after we lost our son, there's definitely a feeling of being completely alone and like sort of, I had a feeling, I don't speak for my wife, but even though I think she would agree, you have like a feeling sort of like uniqueness of like, this is a thing, even though intellectually I know this has happened to other people, because I'm surrounded generally by people that it hasn't happened to, I had that feeling of like, only I have ever experienced this. And so finding other people who, maybe if they don't have the same specific grief, but something vaguely similar, even, you know, like my parents were, you know, died in a car crash or whatever other horrible thing that made me feel like, okay, well, we speak the same language.
Yeah.
Like there's, you know, I can say things to you that I can't say to other people. Is it like that also when you're hanging out with people or from the Triumph Foundation or Santina, where it's like, I can have a conversation with you that even people who love me very much and want the best for me and whose care and love I respect and adore,
right,
they don't know how to say the words that you and I are saying to each other. Is it like that at all?
Yeah. You know, I with the Triumph Foundation, I was part of a support group, which was on Zoom, of course, because that's the way things are now. But
right,
it was about sex as a paralyzed person. And me and my wife are trying, you know, started the process of trying to have a kid. And because I can't ejaculate, we need to do IVF. So we're starting the process of checking our blood levels, checking our hormone levels, getting everything ready for that, which is a long process. But my biggest, God, worry still is, can I be a good father in a wheelchair? Can I be a capable father in a wheelchair? If my kid needs me, am I capable of helping them? Or will I not be able to just because I'm paralyzed from the waist down? And that's only something you can talk to other paralyzed fathers about. You can't talk to an able-bodied father and say, I'm worried about being a father in a wheelchair. And he'll be like, it's okay, you'll be fine. He just doesn't know.
Right.
He doesn't know. He can pee like a normal man.
Doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah. He can go take a shit like a normal man. He doesn't realize that when you're paralyzed, part of your, if not all of your functionality is taken away from you. So if you have a child who depends on you, how can you feel confident that you'll be able to take care of this kid? And what they told me is that, one, you can be a great father. Two, you're going to teach your children about paralysis and being in a wheelchair and accessibility and equality among, you know, people at a very early age that most children don't understand. And third, there are so many new pieces of equipment and technology. There's a baby harness that you can wear on a wheelchair, so I can use my hands to wheel around, and the baby's, you know, it's a Bajoran. I'm sure you've seen them, but
yeah,
there's lots of different equipment that you can use to help yourself with, you know, caring or moving or, you know, doing what you need to do with a kid. So it was nice to hear that from people that have gone through it and have told me that it's going to be okay, because this is all new to me and I've never been a father before and I've always wanted to be a father. And if I can be a father now, I'm going to be a father in a wheelchair. And that's something you can only talk to other paralyzed fathers about.
Sure. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Like, mm-hmm. I think that the thing that rises up in me, as you said, right, where you're like, you know, can I be a good father and be paralyzed? My instinct is to be like, well, you're going to be a great dad. But I know from my own loss, having people who don't have any idea what they're talking about,
right,
be like, well, you're going to, you know, he's in a better place or whatever. You're like, bro, just please shut the fuck up. Oh. I'm asking myself, really, not even asking you.
Yes, exactly. Especially if people that haven't suffered loss like you have.
Yeah, and I think I'm never like upset about it. And I don't know, I mean, I don't know how you respond to those things. I think it's always people trying to they're just trying to be nice and say like, you know, the good thing. They don't,
yeah.
It's very uncomfortable for them because they literally can't imagine it. So they're just like, I guess it would be, I'm going to say whatever the nicest words I can possibly come up with are. So I'm not mad about it, but it is like.
Right, I hope it's okay.
Yeah, but I know that you don't understand. You know, you do the best you can.
Yeah.
But there's no way you'll know what I'm talking about. And I think I could see that being, I think that's what you're saying, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I wanted to talk about your wife also, because all of this happened, as you said, on the third date.
Yeah, and she fell through the skylight with me. So she went through the trauma of it. Thankfully, God, thank you for not injuring her as badly as I was injured. But she still went through it, and she still had to see me in the hospital go through it. And there was, but that first month, she barely saw me because I was such a bad shape that my parents and family wanted to keep my friends away because of the state I was in. And when she finally came out to see me, she did it very slowly. She'd come out to see me once a week and she'd bring me flowers, and she just took it very slowly with me. And as I began to get my thoughts back and my personality back, I started to really look forward to seeing her every week. And I would remember I was in rehab a couple months before I was released, maybe a month before. And she came during Easter weekend and she said, I hid some eggs out in the courtyard for you if you want to go try to find them. And I said, of course I want to go on an Easter egg hunt. And she had a little basket and we went out in the courtyard and she hid them in the bushes and stuff. And it was really fun and sweet. And they had candy and stuff inside of them. And it was just a nice, thoughtful thing that she did for me. And I knew at that time that she was someone special, that she not only had the heart to want to continue to see me after the accident, but also had the their creativity and the thoughtfulness to make me feel special in some way. That even though I was in a wheelchair, I could still have an Easter egg hunt. I could still celebrate. And it was that moment I thought, oh, I hope she keeps coming back because I really like this woman more than I thought I could ever like somebody. And I think it's partly because I was in such dire situation and my life was changed forever, but also because she is that type of person. And I've seen her continue to be that person, not just with me, but with her friends too and her family. She's incredibly loyal and incredibly thoughtful, and she's great. And she became a personal trainer over the past couple of years because working out is very important to her. And now she's helped me stay in shape with her expertise. And so not only does she help my mind and spirit, but she also tries to help my body and as well. But Erin has told me that, you know, I've had PTSD, is that what it is? Post-traumatic stress disorder. I've had flashes where I feel like I'm falling again. I'll be just be sitting in my chair and I feel like I'm falling. It would happen pretty regularly for the first few months after I got out of rehab. I get a sensation I'm falling. Erin, much later, when I told Erin that was happening to me, Erin said, you know, sometimes there's exercises at the gym where I have to jump onto a box and then jump off of the box, and I can't do it. I can't jump backwards off of the box because I start having a panic attack or whatever, because I can't just fall backwards, even though it's part of an exercise. I just can't do that anymore. So she's gone through her own trauma with it. Her body has gone through that trauma. Not only has, you know, her emotions been tried, but also she fell with me. She went to the hospital with me. That's ingrained in her body now. And so we did share a little bit of that trauma together. Thankfully, she's not paralyzed, but emotionally, it's still pretty tough. You know, after I got injured recently at the airport, I developed some pressure sores on my feet and ankles where the casts were, where the boots were. And one night when Erin found the second pressure sore, she just broke into tears and said, I wish I could take care of you. I wish these things wouldn't continue to happen to you. I wish that I could do more for you. And I had to tell her, listen, these pressure sores aren't because any fault of yours. It's because I can't feel down there. So I didn't notice that they were growing and the doctors didn't catch them in time. So it has nothing to do with you, honey. But she still puts herself back on that night where I was unconscious and she had to run and go get help. Even with a pressure sore, it brings her back to that moment of he's hurt and I can't help him. And she still bumps into that grief as well. Mostly it's when something happens to me.
I mean, I think that feeling of helplessness is very, I mean, again, not identical, but recognizable to me of like, I remember like after our son died, my wife in the room, they put us in this little room where they were keeping us for like the couple of days where we were checking to see if there was any way he was going to recover or not. And then, you know, they came and told us that he was going to die. Mm. And I remember her saying like, how am I ever going to be happy again? I mean, she's just, you know, we're both wasted with tears, but in that exact moment, she was crying, you know, more than I was. And that being like, I mean, that moment of seeing the person you love, like taken to zero and being like, I honestly don't know what I can do for you is a separate grief that I think people don't even talk about of like, there's the thing itself, but then there's also the inability to do anything about it is like a different layer of how hard it is.
Yeah. I have a younger brother. He just graduated college. That's how young he is. But he, you know, he flew out pretty quickly to see me when I was in the hospital. And after I was back home and the family kind of reunited, we kind of all sort of broke down in tears about just how hard the past few months had been. And something my brother said was that it was just so hard to see you there and not be able to do anything for you.
Yeah.
And that broke my heart. It breaks my heart when Erin cries for me. It breaks my heart when my parents cry for me. because this didn't just happen to me. It also has affected the people that are closest to me. And to see them hurt by it hurt me too. And it's that's a really sad part of it all, is that you see your family suffering from it as well.
Jason, are there, you talked about becoming in some ways like more communicative and other ways in which you changed because of how your life has changed. Are there things you feel that, this is kind of maybe a perverse question, but like good things that have come out of this? Anything that you're like, well, you know, maybe something that you learned from this experience or from your process of coping with it?
Yeah, I mean, just to reiterate what you just mentioned about how I'm more communicative. I can't say that word. I'm more honest and open with my wife when we speak. And I'm not driven by the orgasm like I was before. Even though as you get older, that sort of dissipates, but it's still part of your identity. I think what I really learned was that, wow, I really didn't treat some of the women I was with before with enough respect and honesty when I could have. Instead, I decided to either leave them without a warning or distance myself from them, put them at arm's distance, sort of kind of, instead of saying, honestly, you know what? I'm getting bored with this relationship. I think I need something new. I wouldn't be able to say that to the people I was with. I would come up with some other excuse. And now I realize, looking back, that that was not the best way to treat somebody. And now that I've had that taken away from me in my life, and when I think it's, you know, 99% with emotion and reason instead of sex, I realized that, yeah, you know, like there was a lot of times where I my dick made the choices for me. And now that I can't talk to my dick anymore, I realized, yeah, that I was probably a bit of an asshole in the past because of that. So that, I guess, is a silver lining on a dark cloud in regards to me at least realizing that about myself and who I was and how I want to be moving forward. So I think that's something that I'm glad I came to the realization, even though it's through these tough circumstances.
I mean, I really appreciate you being so open about sexuality, because I do think that's something that people are like, are curious about, but is really not ever discussed. I mean, at least not discussed in the circles that I frequent, about how paralysis can affect your sex life and your ability, you know, the way you think about your significant other, mm-hmm. and the thoughts you have about fatherhood.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I wanted to ask you also, you appealed to God about like, you know, 5 minutes ago, you were talking about your wife, and I see you're wearing a cross around your neck. Are you a religious person?
I wouldn't say I'm religious. I would say I was raised Catholic, and I have since fallen out of favor with the Catholic Church for many reasons, but I still have a faith. Erin was Southern Baptist growing up, and she still has a faith, but we're not practicing. But I think you could tell by how we treat each other and how we treat others, with trying to be kind and trying to assume good intentions from people. My parents keep saying, you know, maybe there's a reason, God has a reason why you got paralyzed. Maybe the reason was so that you could marry Erin. Maybe the reason was this and that. But I can't believe that God would do something like this to teach me something. I don't want to believe in a God that would do something like that. Just like I don't want to believe in a God that lets children die to teach something. I think whenever there's a tragedy in your life, it's up to you to find the meaning of it. It's up to you to not despair in it, but to find positivity in it and to try to be better from it. I don't think God has a plan like that. I think it's in our hearts, in our shoulders, to try to find the positive in every horrible situation. And so that's where I stop you know, I'm trying to put my faith in myself and my wife and my family and my friends, because they have shown me true kindness and forgiveness and support. And I want to build off of that, that love that they've shown me, which is real concrete love here in my life. My parents are still pretty Catholic and still believe that there's a reason for everything. And I don't necessarily believe that. I believe it's your task to find the reason if you want to. You know, you could become a drug addict and live on the streets because you can't deal with what happened to you, or you can fight through the grief and try to be better from it. I don't think I need God to do that, but I definitely need my wife and my family, my friends to do that.
You talking about how people might say to you, everything happens for a reason. And that's like true in a way. And the way in which it's true is that if you find a reason for it, then there is one. I'm kind of paraphrasing you, but does that sound accurate?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that is what I was saying before, that I have come to believe that very strongly. Like my wife became a nurse because of our son. I'm doing this for however helpful it is because of my son. Your wife became not a physical therapist, a
personal trainer.
Thank you. Your wife became a personal trainer, which, you know, can't have nothing to do with your paralysis, right? I mean, it must, even if it's not 100% because of that, it certainly works out to your great benefit that she has a level of expertise that she would not have otherwise had.
Yeah, I think my paralysis had put in the forefront of her mind her ability to help people physically.
Yeah.
She was very involved at her gym and wanted to be, a personal trainer for a while. But I think her husband being paralyzed made her realize that, oh, there are people out there that need help physically, and I can give that to them. And actually, she's been a trainer for Santina, who I mentioned earlier, but...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but other people in wheelchairs, so...
That's amazing. I mean, that's amazing. And that's the kind of... I mean, her becoming a trainer for people in wheelchairs is something, I mean, right?
Yeah.
Almost definitely would not have happened.
No.
If you hadn't had this accident.
No, in fact, she developed she's part of a WAGS group, and that stands for, actually, I don't know what it stands for, but it's a support group of, I really don't, it's funny, but it's a support group of spouses and partners of people with paralysis. And she's part of that support group, and we get information and ask questions sometimes, but she realized that a lot of these people don't know how to properly lift somebody. And she developed a workout routine and regimen specifically for people who have loved ones in wheelchairs, that in case they fall, do you know how to pick them back up? Are you strong enough to pick them back up? And these are things that she obviously never thought about until she was married to a paraplegic. And she was able to write that program and share that program with other people that live with people in wheelchairs, because you don't know you need it until you need it.
Right. And that's like that's a reason that she has found for this happen. Like that's purpose moving forward, which I feel like for me assuages the grief, and not, it doesn't get rid of it, but it helps me make sense of it to be like, well, here are things that I'm doing with it.
Mm-hmm.
The last question I wanted to ask you, Jason, is, well, there's two parts to this, I guess. One is, if you could tell people who have no awareness, like have no idea what it's like to be paralyzed, anything at all about what it's like, or maybe, you know, advice to give them, is there something that you wish people knew?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be hard, and your life is going to be changed forever, but that doesn't mean that it needs to be worse or less than. You just need to understand that part of your body isn't responsive like it was. You can't talk to your body like you could. And at first, that's very disheartening and sad, but there are people who have gone through it as well. There are resources for you that if you have the mind and the willpower to do it, you can get back most of your life. It's not going to be the same, but that doesn't mean it has to be worse. You can still find joy in a lot of things and still have fun with a lot of things, but you're going to have to make that choice for yourself. And if you choose to continue and try to have the best life you can, then reach out to other people that have gone through the same thing, because no one else understands it. Nobody else knows what it's like to ride in a wheelchair from your house to the grocery store and back, except people who live in wheelchairs. So just remember that you're not alone, and that people have gone through it, and there are people there to help you. And you're more than your physical abilities. That doesn't define who you are. You're you because of the attitude and the motivation and the aspiration you have in your heart, not because you can walk or not.
Jason, that's beautiful. Thank you for doing this. This was another episode of A Good Cry with Jason Sines. I hope it helps. Hi, friends. Thanks for listening to that episode of A Good Cry. It's Michael Cruz Kane here again to tell you that I'm doing a show on March 18th at 9:30 p.m. at New York City's Caveat. It's called Sorry for Your Loss. It'll be me and some friends talking about grief with a little bit of seriousness, a little bit of irreverence, and I hope you'll come. The last one of these was at Fotografiska in New York, and we packed the place, and I'd love to do it again. The link for tickets is in the description of this episode. I will see each and every one of you there. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review this podcast. And, you know, just send good vibes out into the universe whenever you can. Love you, and you are the best. Bye. A Good Cry is produced by Radio Point and HeadGum, with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, Richard Corson, Daniel Powell, and Houston Snyder. Recorded, edited, and mixed by Bree Mattan.
That was a HeadGum podcast.